On average, children get about 8 upper respiratory tract infections per year, most of which involve cough, which can be a nuisance. It can ruin the child's sleep, and it can ruin the parent's sleep. And it can also be very distressing for parents. A survey found that one of the commonest fears about their child's cough is that they may die. It's no wonder we spend a fortune on cough medications then. In Australia alone, we spend $67 million per year on over-the-counter cough medications for kids. Yet almost all regulators and guidelines warn against using them. One, because they don't work, and two, because they may be harmful. The Australian Therapeutic Guidelines, the Royal Children's Hospital Guidelines, the American Academy of Pediatric Guidelines, the FDA, and the TGA, to name a few, all recommend against using cough medicines in kids under 6 years of age. Is there anything else we can use to combat cough in kids? Perhaps the age-old tradition of giving honey? Well, believe it or not, honey for cough has been tackled in the scientific literature 3 times. This week, we look at the evidence. Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Evidence-Based Medicine Podcast. I'm Daniel Aronoff, and today, does honey work for cough? By way of background, by far, most of the over-the-counter cough medications have dextromethorphan as their active ingredient. Robitussin, Dimetapp, cough, cold and flu, Vicks, Codral, cold and flu and cough, Bisolvan, Mucinex and others. Occasionally, like in Benadryl, diphenhydramine is the antitussive ingredient. The first of our 3 randomized controlled trials compared honey to dextromethorphan to usual care, or doing nothing. It was done in Pennsylvania in the United States, and it was published in 2007 in the Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine. They recruited anyone between the ages of 2 and 18 who presented to a single pediatric clinic in Pennsylvania with a cough that was due to an upper respiratory tract infection, and it had to have been present for less than 7 days. Now, all 3 of these randomized controlled trials were just a 1-day study. They took a cough survey on the day they presented to their doctor. Then that night, they got one of the treatments or the placebo. Then the next day, they would do another cough survey. And that was the end of the study. But that's all you really need. I mean, it would be nice to know if honey impacted the duration of the illness. But really, in terms of cough, all you need is one night without the treatment or the placebo, and then one night with the treatment or the placebo, and compare between the 2 nights. So as they came to their pediatrician wanting them to fix their child's cough, they were asked if they wanted to participate in the study. And if they consented, they immediately had to fill out this questionnaire about the child's cough from the night before, when they didn't have any treatment for their cough. Now, all 3 randomized controlled trials used the same questionnaire, which is really handy. There were 5 questions on this survey, and they each had 7 possible tick box answers. The questions were, how severe was your child's cough last night? How frequent was your child's cough last night? How bothersome was your child's cough last night? How much did your child's cough affect your child's ability to sleep? And how much did your child's cough affect the parent's ability to sleep? The possible answers were not at all, not much, a little, somewhat, a lot, very much, or extremely. Only parents who got a score of at least 3, which was somewhat, for at least 2 of these 5 questions were then able to be included in the study. So this study managed to recruit 130 kids, but only 105 completed the study for whatever reason. They were then randomized into 3 groups. The first group got an artificially honey-flavored dextromethorphan preparation. The second group got honey, and the third group got nothing. Now, I'm no honey expert, but the honey they used was buckwheat honey, in case you're interested. And good on them for making an artificial honey-flavored dextromethorphan. So the no treatment arm were not blinded, but the honey and the dextromethorphan groups were. And the investigators were blinded from all 3 interventions. They gave the honey or dextromethorphan in an unlabeled syringe and were told to give it to their child 30 minutes before bed that very night. They then called them the next day and asked them to answer the exact same 5 cough questions that they did the day before. So again, they managed to get complete data for 105 children. The average age was 5. The oldest person in the study was 17. And they were sick for an average of 4.5 days before presenting to the clinic. The primary outcome they were assessing was the difference in cough frequency from the night they didn't take anything to the next night when they had either honey, dextromethorphan, or nothing. The other outcomes were the other four questions in the survey: cough severity, cough bothersomeness, child sleep, and parental sleep. They determined that a clinically meaningful change in score would be one. So dropping from very much to somewhat, or from somewhat to a little, which makes sense. I think this would be a noticeable difference for most people. The average cough score for each of the five questions in the survey as they entered into the study was about 4 out of 6, which means on average they were ticking the a lot box. So my child's cough affects my sleep a lot last night. How severe was your child's cough last night? A lot, and so on and so forth. So what did they find? Well, for all five of the outcomes, the greatest reduction in score was seen with honey, then dextromethorphan, then doing nothing. Important to note that the doing nothing group did improve, because as we know, these things just get better with time. So I won't go into the exact results of all five of these outcomes because they were all pretty much the same. But let's take cough frequency as an example. How frequent was your child's cough last night? So the night before, when they didn't get any treatment, the average score for this question was 4, representing a lot. Giving them no treatment on the night of the experiment took their score down by 0.92. Let's call it 1. So it took the average response to this question down from a lot to somewhat. Giving honey took the score down by 1.89 points. So let's call it 2. So it took it down from a lot to a little, while dextromethorphan took it down to somewhere in between. It was 1.39 points, so somewhere in between somewhat and a little. So just to summarize that, when answering the question how frequent was your child's cough last night, doing nothing will take it from a lot to somewhat, giving honey will take it from a lot to a little, and giving dextromethorphan will take it down to something in between. I hope I haven't confused you. I'm just trying to give you the actual responses that each of the numbers in the score represent to give you a bit more sort of clinical context to the whole scoring system. And that was the basic gist of all of their outcomes. Doing nothing leads to some improvements, giving honey led to greater improvements, and giving dextromethorphan disguised as honey was somewhere in between the two. And despite the fact that you can clearly see this pattern from the graph of all five of their questions, only one of them reached statistical significance when they compared honey to doing nothing, and that was for cough frequency. And here, the difference in score was 0.97, so just shy of that minimally clinically important difference of 1. So that's the first study. Now, it's hard to judge whether we should believe this study because I know the results of the other two studies, but I think at the time the study didn't really impress a lot of people. Yes, some benefits, but questionable whether these benefits were meaningful. Oh, and did I mention that this study was funded by the National Honey Board? So yeah. Over to the next randomized controlled trial. This one was done in Iran in 2010 and was published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. Here, they were comparing honey versus dextromethorphan versus diphenhydramine versus usual care. They recruited 141 children between the ages of 2 and 5 and randomized them into these four groups. The first group got 2.5 milliliters of honey, the second group got 2.5 milliliters of dextromethorphan syrup, the third group got 2.5 milliliters of diphenhydramine, and the fourth group got usual care. Well, actually all four groups got usual care and their intervention. This group got only usual care. Usual care being saline nasal irrigation, paracetamol, and things like that. This was, again, an overnight study. On the day they came into the pediatric clinic, they were given the exact same survey. Then that night they had the intervention, and this time they came back into the clinic the next day where they did the questionnaire again. Now, it's important to mention that the methods used in this study were really borderline. There was no blinding, which granted is difficult to do with honey, but at least in the other study they made an effort with honey-flavored dextromethorphan. Here they did nothing. And while blinding patients, yes, is important, what's way more important is blinding the researchers, and I don't think they did that here either. I say I don't think because this study was quite poorly written, and I'm not blaming the authors. I would hate to have to write a journal article in Arabic. In fact, I commend them for publishing it in English, because some systematic reviews exclude any studies that are not written in English. So if this was only published in Arabic, it might never have surfaced its head in the literature again. But it was clearly written by someone for whom English was probably their second language, which makes it difficult to know whether they didn't blind their investigators or they did and it was just sort of lost in translation. There was also no allocation concealment, as far as I could tell, which makes you wonder whether there was actually any randomization. But perhaps the weirdest part of the study was, and I quote, "Any ambiguous questions for the mother, if any, was answered by a pediatrician." What the? So the investigators were answering questions if the mothers didn't know the answer? This makes it even more alarming when you consider that the investigators were not blinded. So if they had a personal belief that honey was better, they could influence the results, even if only subconsciously. So what were the results? Well, the starting score for each of these questions was around 4, which is the same as the other trial. And the results were pretty much identical to the other study. In the usual care group, the score went down to about an average of 2.5 across the outcomes from the questionnaire. In the honey group, the score went down to about 1.5. And for dextromethorphan and the diphenhydramine, the score went down to 2. But this time, when comparing honey to usual care, the improvement was statistically significant for all of the outcomes. And they were also clinically meaningful, having at least a difference of 1 point between the two for each of the outcomes. All right, so that's 2 down. What do we have so far? Well, we have one study which showed a benefit for honey, but only reaching statistical significance for 1 out of the 5 outcomes. And this study, which shows a definite statistical significance with clear, meaningful differences, but at a high risk of bias. Now, it's been a few episodes since I stood on my soapbox and waxed poetically about the perils of evidence-based medicine, but I might take this opportunity. So, if this was the only evidence we had, isn't it awesome how evidence is just not black and white? How part of the beauty of it is to take the information, then apply all the other factors to make a decision about whether you're going to use it or not for your particular patient. Now, that could come from the cost of the treatment, and honey is pretty cheap. It could come from the side effects of the treatment, pretty minimal side effects in honey. And when you consider the side effects of the other options, which I'll get to at the end. And I love the fact that two people can look at the evidence and reach two totally different conclusions. It's a beautiful thing. We can now make the assessment of this imperfect evidence based on our patients' values and preferences and on our own experiences. I could cry. All right, let's see what this third randomized controlled trial found. So this last one was done in Israel and compared eucalyptus honey to citrus honey to labiate honey to placebo, which is awesome because as someone who does use honey in general practice, I always get asked, which honey? Now, this was the best designed trial out of all the three. They recruited children between the ages of 1 and 5 from 6 pediatric clinics who were presenting with a nocturnal cough due to an upper respiratory tract infection. They used the exact same cough questionnaire as the other two studies, and they managed to recruit 270 kids and blinded both the patient and their families as well as the investigators. They also concealed allocation. Woohoo! They randomized them into 4 groups. 3 of them were honey, but the different honeys, eucalyptus, citrus, and labiate honey. Now, if there are any honey connoisseurs fuming at the way I just mispronounced that, I'm really, really sorry. And the 4th group was placebo, for which they used Ceylan date extract, which they report looks and tastes similar to honey. They were all packaged in little 10-gram packets, and you couldn't tell the difference between them. Like the other two, this was an overnight study, so they took the survey the day of the presentation, gave them the honey or placebo that night, 30 minutes before bed, then redid the survey the next day. Like the first study, an investigator called them and they did the second survey over the telephone. Now, these kids were just over the age of 2, and on average they were sick for about 3 days when they presented. And again, they used the 5 separate questions of the cough survey as individual outcomes, but the primary outcome was cough frequency, and the other 4 were secondary outcomes. So what did they find? Well, firstly, there was no difference between the 3 types of honey for any of the 5 outcomes. But honey was superior to the placebo date syrup for all 5 of the outcomes. And this was statistically significant. And the reductions were very similar to the other 2 trials. On average, across the five outcomes, the date extract had about a 1-point reduction in the cough score, while the three different honeys had about a 2-point reduction in cough score. So there you have it. Three trials, one from America, one from Iran, and one from Israel, each of varying quality, but each showing basically the same thing. So what's the bottom line? Honey reduces the frequency and severity of cough in children associated with upper respiratory tract infections. It also improves child's sleep and parental sleep. When compared head-to-head, it is superior to the vast majority of cough medications which either contain dextromethorphan or diphenhydramine as their active ingredient. Great. So there it is. Now, just a few thoughts. Firstly, all of the trials and many other commentaries since these trials have tried to postulate what it is in honey that gives it these special cough-reducing properties. And they all try to pin it down to one thing, either the flavonoids or vitamin C or the polyphenolics or the antioxidants. And that's great. I love the drive we have in science to find out why. The problem is that this way of thinking doesn't always help us. When we try to reduce a complicated thing down to just one component, it often doesn't end well. Let's take hormone replacement therapy, for example. We knew that women seem to be protected against cardiovascular disease up until menopause, when their risk quickly rose up to that of their male counterparts. And we had the perfect explanation: estrogen and progesterone. The fall in these hormones are the main contributors to menopause, so it must be the fall in these hormones that are causing all the problems of chronic diseases and cardiovascular diseases that women are seeing after menopause. And so this drug went viral. Almost all women were prescribed this hormone replacement therapy to reduce their cardiovascular risk, reduce chronic diseases, and improve survival, among other things. From 1992 until 2002, the hormone replacement therapy drug Premarin was the most prescribed medication every single year for 10 years straight. Now, given that it only caters for 50% of the population, that's huge. But it took till 2002 before the first actual randomized controlled trial looked into it. It was called the Women's Health Initiative, and to the shock of the medical community, it showed that, in fact, estrogen and progesterone therapy increases strokes and heart attacks by about 30%. Now, there are so many examples like this. I think I'm actually going to compile them and make a whole episode on them, actually. But my point is, well, what's my point? My point isn't that we shouldn't pursue mechanisms of action. We should. It's the job of science to try and figure out how things work. I think my point is just that we should never let it get in the way or take precedence over randomized controlled trial evidence. I mean, you see this sort of thing all the time. First, tomatoes are associated with decreased prostate cancer. Then out of nowhere, lycopene will prevent prostate cancer. Well, hang on. Lycopene is just one compound in tomatoes. Why are you putting all your prostate-lowering associations of tomatoes into the lycopene basket? So yeah, there are apparently 181 compounds in honey. All we know is that honey improves cough over doing nothing and over cough medications. We don't know whether it's one of these compounds, whether it's all 181, or whether it's the specific interaction between a couple of them or all of them. Now, second thing worth mentioning is that though not seen in these trials, cough medications do have a lot of serious adverse effects reported in the literature. Firstly, 15% of all childhood overdoses in America are from cough medications. A third of the time it's because the incorrect dose was given to the child by the parent, but in 2/3 of the time it's because the child found it, went, this tastes delicious, and drank the whole thing. But even with standard doses, dystonias have been reported, anaphylaxis has been reported, hallucinations, mania. I mean, I just can't see why patients should ever take this. It's clear that it doesn't work, not only from these studies we talked about today, but also from a separate Cochrane review, and it's associated with harms. Well, actually, I get it. There is an intense urge for parents to feel like they're doing something to make their child feel better. I'm always getting pressure from my mother-in-law when my child's sick and I'm doing nothing. Do something. But nothing works. We just need to wait. His cough will get better. Trust me. But we have to do something. Well, now we have honey. Kids love it, minimal risk, and more effective than any medications out there. By the way, I would never do nothing if my child was sick. That's just cruel. I call it expectant management. or monitoring closely seems much less passive. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention, the recommendation is that kids under one cannot take honey because of the risk of botulism. So contraindicated if less than one, above one, safe to use and good to use for cough. Alrighty, that's it from me. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please leave a comment on iTunes. I have no idea why, but all the other podcasts are telling people to do it, so maybe it's helpful. Plus, I actually love reading the comments. All the references and an abridged written version of this episode is available at www.ebmpodcast.com. So if you want to look something up in the future, without having to re-listen to the whole podcast, you can find it there. Next week, we're going to discuss a trial that's been making headlines. It was a randomized controlled trial assessing the use of statins as primary prevention in the elderly. That's next week. I'm Daniel Aronoff. I'll talk to you then.